Good morning. Good morning. This is a meeting of the Stationary Source Committee. May we have roll call?
On the roll for the Stationary Source Committee meeting of March 20th, 2017, Director Canepa.
Here.
Director Groom, Director Haggerty, here. Director Miley, Director Mitchoff, Director Sparing, Director Wagon Connect, Vice Chair Sinks, Committee Chair Joya.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Great. Okay, why don't we start with the Pledge to the Flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's sounding more like a cult chant.
Yes.
All right,
our first item is public comment, which is the chance for the public to speak on items which are not on on our agenda. Each speaker has 3 minutes, and I have five public comment cards. Okay, the first is Kayla Dunlap, followed by Nadia Alvarez, and one more. Kayla Dunlap. And I think you can use either mic. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Kayla Dunlap, and I am a student at De Anza. I believe everyone has the right to clean air. That is why I support the Rule 1216. And think you should support it as well. I also urge you to hold the adoption hearing for Rule 1216 in a refinery community on a weekday after 5 p.m. Since the meetings are held at this time, I am missing my Spanish 3, English, and biology classes. These classes are important, but being here to show my support for Rule 1216 has even more important to me. Clean air should be a right, not a privilege.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Nadia Alvarez. Good morning. Okay. Henry's going to help you with the... Great. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Nadia Alvarez, and I'm a student at De Anza High School in El Sobrante. I'm here to support Rule 1216 because my community needs and wants to have clean air for their health. I know many people in my family and friends who have respiratory problems, and with the air quality in my neighborhood, they have many asthma attacks or problems breathing, and I want them to be able to live a healthy life. I urge you to hold the board members to... I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. You're doing fine. You're doing fine.
I urge the board members to have the adoption hearing for Rule 12 to 16 in a refinery community on a Wednesday after 5 p.m. so many of the labor workers or students living in the area are able to attend. And the other one. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Nancy Cuellar, followed by AJ. Good morning.
Hello again. My name is Nancy Cuellar. I'm a student at UC Berkeley studying conservation and resource studies with an emphasis in environmental law and justice. So I lived in Richmond for 2 years now, and I see some similarities between Richmond and my hometown in Southeast Los Angeles. And I just love how it's enriched with culture, how it's enriched with empowered people, and I just want it to have a safe and healthy environment where people and children can enjoy and to live their lives for the future. I may not be fluent in Richmond or the Bay history, but I will fight for the injustice impacting people of color and low income. I've been fighting this in Southeast Los Angeles, and I will continue this here in Richmond. I implore you to accept and approve Rule 1216 and to have the adoption hearing, which is scheduled for May 17th, at a refinery community, and that which will allow people, community members, people who've worked, people who go to school there, students, to attend this meeting. So please have it on a weekday at after 5 p.m. I'm not just here to voice my concern. I'm also here to introduce the youth who are here on behalf of their communities. They're not here to just voice their opinion. They're here to voice their families who couldn't attend. They're here to voice their communities who are desperately wanting healthier air for their communities. So please help us get a better lives for our future, and we're here to stand up for our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. AJ, followed by Isabella Gallegos.
Hello, my name is AJ, and I support Rule 1216. I'm here missing school because I really want Rule 1216 to pass, and I'm not getting paid for any of this, unlike many other people are. And I ask for you to schedule the adoption hearing in a more community refinery area where more people can actually attend the meeting after 5 p.m. because on a day like this, not many people can really come and, you know, share their opinions about what they think on Rule 1216 or getting cleaner air. My community needs and deserves clean air, and it can also, you know, highly reduce the amount of people that are getting sick from all this air. And yeah, our community can be a lot healthier, and our future can also be very safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Isabella Gallegos, followed by Selena Rodriguez.
Hi, I'm Isabella Gallegos. I am a student at Richmond High School. I want limits on the amount that oil refineries remit within my community. I came here to show that I support Rule 1216, and I urge you to hold the adoption hearing in a fence line community on a weekday after 5 p.m. so that students like myself and the others where pollution impacts can make it to that hearing. I have asthma myself, and I had to withstand the Chevron refinery fire on August 6, 2012, and I want you to know that I care about my community as much as I care about my health. Thank you.
Thank you. Selena Rodriguez, followed by Charles Han, or Han.
Hi, I'm Selena Rodriguez, and I'm from De Anza High School. And I'm here because we want clean air, and we want... I'm also here because we want to urge the... to...
It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
Heard your meeting. There's consistent message here. Yes. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I am here. I'm missing my four periods, and I'm missing an AP class because we want to move it. We want it to be held at a refinery community.
Thank you. Just as a message to the students, we appreciate students coming and expressing their position on behalf of themselves and their families. And just to note, if one of the other items, if you're staying at the meeting, is item five is a presentation about a new clean air plan that's talking about a number of strategies that the Air District is looking at over the next number of years with regard to clean air as well. So if you're still staying. That's an interesting presentation on the big picture of all of this. While we're considering important rules, this is sort of a presentation on the big picture if you're interested in staying on that too. Charles Hahn, followed by Andre Soto.
Sorry. My name is Charles Hahn, and I work for the Shell Martinez Refinery, and I'm here representing the people of the Bay Area refineries, some of whom you see standing behind me. So I grew up in Southeast Houston, which has a lot of petrochemical industry, and one of the starkest memories I have growing up is of the flares blasting 24/7, day and night. I remember thinking that that can't be right. Much later in life, when I came out to work for Shell Oil, I was very apprehensive, worried and afraid that I was signing up to work for a dirty, polluting refinery that was bent on exploitation. I was very pleased to discover and am very proud to know how good these people are and how much they truly do care about safety, the community, and environment. The stories of these folks behind me and the tens of thousands of other families of industry are probably similar, and though they aren't speaking. I come to learn that one of the reasons for the difference between what I saw growing up and what I've experienced here is this board and its history of progressive and reasoned decision-making based on engineering principles and cooperative discussion that have led to change such as in the flare rules. So on the one hand, I would very much like to thank this board and your predecessors for that positive change. And on the other, I would like to advocate for that continued reasoned decision-making and cooperative discussion that will lead us to the future and keep us the cleanest operating facilities in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Andre Soto, it's our last speaker card under public comment.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Andres Soto with Committees for a Better Environment. And so I want to thank the previous speaker for acknowledging the work that was done to pass the first in the nation anti-flaring rule by this board. But of course, we know that that was initiated by Communities for a Better Environment advocating for that as both a health and safety feature for this Bay Area community. So I want to thank you guys for acknowledging our good work. And, also following up on the young people, very proud to see them out here learning what government really works like firsthand. I mean, it's probably, I'm not trying to berate the schools, but it's important to have real life experiences while you're having your education as well. It's not always done just in the classroom. And so this is an important experience for them. And they're speaking on behalf of the young people, but I want to speak on behalf of all the working people who are out there every day right now, who are members of CB and many other organizations who cannot be here this morning. That's why we're asking for you to have the hearing when you adopt Rule 1216, to have it be in a refinery community. Richmond would love to host you, but I'm sure Benicia would be happy as well. And that, you know, we're preparing for these workshops that are going to be happening next week. And we are going to be focused in Benicia and in Richmond because we want to have the people really understand what these rules are attempting to do and how they would make our lives better here in the Bay Area. And once again, set a precedent by this progressive board, as was stated by the previous speaker, to establish a new kind of regime for protecting our health and safety and helping us to achieve the goals for clean air that we all want to have in the future if we're going to save this planet. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last public comment card I have. Anyone else wish to speak under public comment? All right, moving on to item three. So do we have a quorum? 3, 4, 5. Yes. Okay, so approval of the minutes of January 30th. Is there a motion?
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor? Aye. I don't think we need roll call on that one. Marcy, right? Okay, item four is an update on the Milpitas San Jose waste facilities.
Thank you, Chair Joya. Wayne Keno, our Director of Compliance and Enforcement, will give this presentation.
It's on? Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson Joya, members of the committee. I'm Wayne Kino. I'm here to provide you with an update on the issues at Milpitas San Jose Waste Facilities. Although we call this Milpitas San Jose Waste Facilities Update, the three facilities that we're going to discuss today are actually in San Jose, and the impacts are felt mostly in Milpitas, Southern Fremont, and Northern San Jose. So in this, we're going to be talking about a little bit about the changing waste industry and how it impacts that area. The odor impacts we've been having throughout for the last few years. The facilities themselves we'll discuss. We'll go through some 2016 highlights and the improvements that these facilities have been making. And we'll go over our challenges and our next steps. So as you're aware, the state of California has adopted or is in the process of adopting legislation that's impacting the solid waste industry. There are many assembly bills, 939 for one, enacted in 1989, first required a 50% waste diversion. There are other bills since then which require reductions in sources, diversion, and recycling. CalRecycle is the primary regulatory agency, and the priority of these bills is summarized in this particular slide. 75% diversion from landfills by recycling, moving organics out of landfills and expanding composting, expanding the recycling manufacturing infrastructure, and incorporating new technologies. They're exploring new approaches for state and local funding of these things, too. They're also trying to promote extended producer responsibility. So the odor impacts. We've been getting a lot of odors from this industry throughout the Bay Area. If you look at the Air District in general, we've had about 8,000 complaints, odor complaints, throughout the whole nine counties. That includes West County. That includes all of the facility in the Livermore Valley, San Jose. So way over 8,000 complaints from this industry. We've had over 6,300 complaints, as you can see, 2015-16, from just the Milpitas area. There are many odor sources in this area that I'll be speaking to in the next few slides. And these facilities are under constant change in the feed, the output, due to the state's waste regulatory changes. If you look at this map, you can see the facilities in this San Jose Milpitas area. You have the Newby Island Resource Recovery Park, the sanitary landfill. You can see all those facilities. So basically, the area consists of a materials recovery separation facility. So that's where all the waste is taken and separated out and transported to other facilities. The sanitary landfill, where they actually landfill material. The sewage treatment facility, San Jose Waste Treatment Facility. There's composting facilities, both at the landfill and at the food digestion waste facility. And there's gasification of waste. So if you look at this slide, it sort of outlines the various areas. Not only do these areas transport waste, directly from consumers and then to the recovery facility and then to these other facilities, they also transfer material in process. So for instance, the leachate from the landfill, the liquid material that comes out of the landfill is collected, sent to the sewage treatment plant. The landfill receives material that's off spec. So say the waste energy development ZWED facility has some off spec material, meaning it has some glass in it or something else, that's actually transported to the landfill and buried. And there's a transfer of compost used as cover at the landfill from both facilities. The Air District's role in this, we have permitting authority over those facilities. We also enforce the early action measure for methane emissions from municipal solid waste landfills. That's from the ARB. We have Regulation 7, which is our odorous substances rule, which will be hopefully be amended this year. We have Regulation 8, Rule 34, which is solid waste disposal. That is the landfill rule, requires vapor recovery on these landfills and so forth. We have Regulation 9 Rule 2, a hydrogen sulfide H2S rule, which is an ambient air quality standard. And then we enforce the public nuisance on these facilities. So depending on, complaints, impact, we could enforce public nuisance on any of these facilities. We have a pretty robust complaint system. We're hopefully going to publicly workshop it for improvements later this year also. But we respond to all odor complaints. So if a single person calls in, inspector will call them. If it's ongoing, they'll go to that address, try and figure out what a root cause is. So that's with every complaint. When we get a number of complaints, we have the ability, as I spoke earlier, to enforce a public nuisance regulation. So we handle those a little differently in that we have to confirm face-to-face with that person, with the complainant. We have to trace it back to the facility. So it's a little bit more rigorous process. But I just wanted to emphasize that the inspector does respond to every single odor complaint and does try and investigate for root cause and try and figure out what that root cause is and remedy that. Our inspections, we do routine inspections of these facilities on an annual basis, plus every time we get a complaint or every time we have an issue, we go through an inspection process, so many, many times a year. We try and identify the odor sources, try and help these facilities make changes. As I spoke earlier, these facilities are continuously making changes because the waste streams continually change, and we're trying to facilitate improvements to the operations. Highlights in 216, as you can see here, Newbie, that's the MRF, that's where the material separation takes place. We were getting a lot of complaints on that facility, on that particular source, and we traced a lot of odors coming from that, so the facility has made some improvements to that facility, how they handle waste, how they clean up, and then the landfill itself, upgrades to their gas collection system and installing additional wells to collect that gas. ZWED, which is the food waste facility, we issued permits for that to operate in 2016. And the San Jose Planning Commission did approve Newby Island landfill expansion in 2016. And that's what that does is it basically allows that landfill to continue to operate. I think with its current rate, it was due to close or stop receiving waste sometime around 2020. And this expansion, which is about 75 feet in height, it's not expanding width-wise, but in height, will allow that facility to operate somewhere into the 2040 range. The improvements that these facilities made during the year and ongoing is that the San Jose sewage treatment facility is continuing to make improvements in their operations. The sludge that they harvest every year, that is due to that whole operation is due to become enclosed into tanks. So hopefully that'll keep going on. It's a $1 billion project. The ZWED facility, they continue to make progress. You know, it's a fairly new facility. They're trying to figure out how to operate given the waste stream that's going in there. They've had some issues with the material that comes out of their digesters. They have been odorous. We've had some recent odors coming from that facility, and we're continuing to work with them to try and remedy that. Newby Island, the separation facility, trying some new odorizer, and they're cleaning the operation more frequently to try and reduce odors there. And their composting operation, which we were getting a number of complaints the past few years, they're going to transition to aerated static piles. So pretty much the state of the art sometime in the fourth quarter of this year. Challenges is that to try and adjust to all the diversion that's happening in the state. We continue to get odor-related complaints. You know, every time they fix something, it sort of unmasks other odors in the area. So we continually are chasing odors. They may not be as intense, but because the odor that we've been working on disappears, others come to the forefront, and then we have to go ahead and try and figure out where those are coming from. So, and it does change with time of the year, things change. The jurisdictional challenges over odors from compost and green waste. Health and Safety Code exempts composting facilities from the public nuisance requirement in the Health and Safety Code for the air district to enforce. And there's a definition of what composting is, and that is a challenge for us and both the LEAs who enforce that regulation, where their jurisdiction begins and ours ends, or vice versa. Next steps, we continue to strengthen our partnership with CalRecycle and the local enforcement agencies, try and consolidate our efforts, share information, and try and remedy the situations out there. We continue to participate in the quarterly South Bay Odor Stakeholders meetings. Those are all the facilities that get together to discuss what they've been doing, what they've been fixing, their new projects, that sort of thing, to try and anticipate potential odor sources. We're going to update our complaint procedures, as I mentioned earlier, sometime this year, end of this year, next year, which includes public workshops, and try and tailor our complaint system better to better serve the public. If adopted, we're going to apply the new particulate emission rules that the district has been working on, and Regulation 8, Rule 18, the risk from air toxic emissions at existing facilities that will apply to these facilities. And we plan on amending Reg 7, the odors, substances, and develop regulations for composting and anaerobic digestion. So that's the end of the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Director Haggerty.
Thank you. I have two questions here. First of all, did we tell the public we were talking about this today?
I believe so, yes.
I'm truly surprised. I asked the chairman if there was any speakers on this item today, and he said no, so I'm just like truly surprised that as much energy as this gets down in the district, that there's not one person here to speak on it.
We speak to the community fairly often and discuss what we've been doing. They know about all these issues, how we're attacking this issue and trying to help, and so they've been very supportive of us down there.
Well, but they knew that this
when they called
item
my
was
office,
on.
They're not completely satisfied, I'm going to tell
no,
you that.
No. Not completely, but they know the direction in which we're going and mm-hmm. how we're trying to solve this issue.
Okay. And then you said that the Planning Commission approved it. Is this an item that actually will ultimately go to the City Council?
No, it's been fully approved. It was an appeal. The appeal was denied, and so the original City Council decision is final. That's my understanding.
That's
San Jose.
Where did it appeal? I'm sorry.
They appealed to the Planning Commission. I believe it was a Planning Commission decision, and that's where the ultimate
lies. If you appeal to the Planning Commission, it appeals to the City Council. So I'm not tracking what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As far as I know, it's been approved, and that the landfill is now going to expand.
Okay. Which I guess leads me to my next question, because I think you said we have no authority over the landfill. Say that again, because
okay.
I was writing when you said it.
Okay.
And what I want to know is, what is our real true regulatory authority over this?
We have authority over the landfill. What we don't have authority over is composting facilities, which is part of the landfill operations, but we have limited jurisdiction over the composting. We have permitting authority, we just don't have public nuisance authority.
Okay. So where does this waste come from?
Are you talking for the whole landfill and
yeah.
for that whole MRF? It comes
yeah.
from all over the area. So it comes from San Jose. It's changed, too, because they've since there's been a Richmond issue, West County, some of that material has been going down to that area, too. So it changes with, what people can accept and what they can't accept. So, but mostly from that area, but it comes from a wide range of that whole area.
So I'm sorry. The answer is kind of not acceptable, because if you ask me where the garbage is going into the landfill in the Altamont, I could tell you. because we put restrictions on where it can come from. And you're saying it changes. Are you saying they did no restrictions on where it can come from?
My understanding is all contractual. So it does come from the peninsula. It comes from San Jose. It used to come from Milpitas, although Milpitas has made a new contract for the coming year to send it someplace else. But it does come from all over the Bay Area.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Brad.
I have a lot of questions.
Oh, go ahead.
You're making me nervous.
Director Haggerty.
Hold on. You're just making me nervous. I mean, I get a lot of calls on this into my district office. Compare the complaints. I mean, you showed us the complaints. You show on that one slide four, you show the complaints for Milpitas and San Jose. How do those complaints compare to the Altamont?
Okay, we have about 8,000 during this time period. Altamont doesn't get a whole lot of complaints if you're asking me directly about Altamont. We generally get West County, some of those other facilities. Altamont gets very few. I would say less than 20.
Partly, I think that has to do with the proximity of the nearest receptors, Director Haggerty. It's a little bit further away from everyone. This actually has...
I appreciate Jack, but I'm leading him somewhere.
Okay, just trying to help.
I'm leading him to an issue. I mean, first of all, this is a very poorly sited landfill. And I really appreciate San Jose siting their landfill just on the edge of Milpitas and Fremont. But maybe they should have put it in the center of their city. If they want a landfill, you know, but they put it way on the edge of the city, you know, against somebody else's city or two other cities. So that's kind of where I'm leading him. The reason you don't get complaints from the Altamont, which, by the way, they're doing all this other stuff, the same stuff that they're doing, is because nobody's there.
Right.
And
that's true.
And the Air District should have... I think, and this is what I'd like to know, it seems to me the Air District should have kind of pushed them that way and said, no, this is not an appropriate siting for a landfill. You know, you got houses right across, you know, basically across the street, across the freeway. It's going to smell. People are going to smell the odors. And, you know, quite frankly, and what I would suggest is what they should have done is they should have utilized the train track that's right there that the ACE train runs on and railed that stuff. They should have used it as a transfer station and railed that stuff in reverse right back to the Altamont and use that landfill that's over there. That's what they should have done. So I don't see, that's why I'm trying to figure out where was our regulatory authority, where could we have pushed people. You know, could there have been a more comprehensive discussion to say, look, let's put this odor, let's put this smell where the people are not, mm-hmm. not where they are, mm-hmm. not where the second largest city in Alameda County is located, or is it the Bay Area? I don't know, it's Fremont, the Bay Area.
Fremont's the,
just Alameda County.
The fourth largest city in the Bay Area.
Or not in Milpitas' backyard. Mm-hmm.
It's been there a long time.
Do we have any odor monitoring stations out there? Is there such a thing?
There have been monitoring. We have done monitoring out there, and there's been odor studies out there where that odor is coming from. It's a very complicated study.
You know where the odor is coming from.
Well, there's actually many odor sources out there. There's the bay at various times when the marshland gets uncovered. There's the sewage treatment facility, which causes an odor sometimes towards the end of the year when they harvest sludge and during the year itself. There's the landfill, composting, and this new ZWED facility, which anaerobically digests food waste and causes some odors there also. So just a number of odor sources that we've been working on.
So, and I apologize, Brad, I'm going to give this to you in just a second, but I'm just really not clear, other than giving people a fine little 800 number to call 24/7. We don't have the ability to shut it down.
No.
do we have, when we don't have the ability, do we have the ability to say you must put this composting facility indoors?
They have made changes to this composting facility.
I heard it's coming forward, but yes. There's also better technology than what they're proposing. They're still proposing a cheap technology. Do we have the ability to tell them to put it indoors?
Well, so let me start, and I'll have Mr.
Bergman. They're in an urban area.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, that's why we wanted to brief you on this. And if you recall at your retreat, you had several speakers come.
I don't recall. I left early.
Well, yeah, we had a lot of speakers come on this point and followed up with them, and there is an ongoing conversation and dialogue with them. I did want to point out something very frustrating to staff. I'll just say it this way, is there's actually a state law that prohibits us from actually writing nuisance violations against composting operations. Composting industry got a bill passed 10 years ago. I don't remember the exact, about that time frame.
Yes.
And it actually explicitly prohibits local air districts from writing nuisance tickets. It's something we ought to get changed, honestly, because...
It's never come to our ledge committee.
I know. But and so you have this industry now faced with these AB 32 goals where they have even more diversion. They've got to take more things out of landfills and seek to try to presumably compost and other things. Mm-hmm. And we see a potential situation getting worse. I'll just say it that way. And so, yes, Director Haggerty, we ought to probably consider some legislative fix here.
Go ahead, Brad. I think I have some more, but I can't read my own writing.
Yeah. Go ahead. I have some general comments and questions after. Go ahead, Brad.
I appreciate Director Haggerty's, this is his district and his area that he's getting these huge number of complaints, and so trying to figure this out. You said that we were working on Rule 7, the odor rule, and the nuisance, and I thought you said that in the new update of that, when we're working on that rule, that it would have some more about composting in that. Did I misunderstand?
I think it'll be more applicable to composting operations. What we're looking at, this rule hasn't been amended since about the 1970s. So there's a lot of new technology, odor sensing technologies, compound specific.
When's this rule come to us?
This new, this Reg 7 amendments in the cleaner plan, and we already have staff working on some background information on that.
And I think that's a good idea to look at the state law that prohibits us from looking at the odors of a composting facility. Thank you.
So I'm reflecting back on my first real exposure to odor issues from odor issues due to composting was I was on the East Bay Mud Board back in the 90s, and East Bay Mud had a program to compost sewage sludge and use that for soil amendment, a good environmental thing. And in the process of that, unfortunately, it caused odors to folks in the West Oakland area, and East Bay Mud closed that down at that time. So we have a situation where we have a really good environmental goal of wanting to reduce organics going to a garbage dump, to a landfill, and to have more diversion and more recycling, which is a good goal. And so the pressure we're seeing now is all of these facilities around the Bay Area continue to intensify, and we're getting more odor complaints. We've gotten them all over the Bay Area. And so it raises to me a couple sort of larger questions. One is... understanding and what role we may play, the technical fixes, the technical solutions that these facilities can implement to reduce the odor complaints. And second is the larger issue of siting for the future, is when we're thinking about where these get sited, these are, under local land use authority for cities and counties, how we, again, can help develop policies to help local jurisdictions as they look at where to site these. But in the meantime, we have to figure out, what agencies, it's not just ours, right? There's state solid waste agencies and all of that, what role everyone can play in sort of moving all of these facilities to better technical
fixes or technical methods of operation that reduce the odor. So do you have any comments about that and suggestions? I mean, so we have this particular one which we need to address, but it raises this larger issue for all these. So we're achieving a good environmental goal, but we're, harming some communities that are adjacent because of odor issues.
So, Director Joye, so we have a measure in the Clean Air Plan, as Wayne mentioned, about odors, but also just about best practices. And I think that you're right. This involves a lot of different agencies. So I think that as we balance odor issues in local communities, reducing organics emissions, and reaching our climate goals, these are many things that need to be balanced. And I think that we will need to participate with local organizations and entities and the state in order to figure out what can we all glean as the best practices and move the agenda forward. And it's going to be a challenge, but it's going to need our attention along with many others to help make progress in this area.
Right. Because some of these facilities have located on sites of former landfills, for example. When the landfills close, because rather than keep, it's this idea that rather than continuing to, have all these new sites, they co-locate at, and so there's less sites, but it raises these issues when there's adjacent neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So our Clean Air Plan, talks a little about this, but so maybe you can touch on that also. And any potential sort of course of action for us in working with other agencies.
Right. With the Clean Air Plan has a measure, including not just odors, but these focusing on best practices and how we balance these different competing. Right. But hopefully we can find ways to meet the multiple objectives over time.
And if I could add, Director Joye, to continue with the idea of best practices, the odor studies have been ongoing are one method by which best practices evolve, and the Air District has, and Wayne in particular, has worked closely in some of those odor studies. And frankly, we've taken a pretty hard-nosed role relative to the City of San Jose and on the nature of those studies and the manner in which we think they should be done, to the extent that we've received some interesting communications, formal communications from San Jose. So we are pushing hard.
So maybe, since it sounds like our role right now could be in recommending best practices to either the land use agency that issues the permit, which could be a city or county, but also to the county environmental health departments, because they're the ones enforcing the sort of state laws with regard to these facilities. So and they actually have a lot of regulatory authority to work with these facilities. So it sounds like environmental health and local solid waste authorities and local land use agencies. So I think it'd be useful to hear more of this in the future and what and our role in getting the best practices out to these folks so that they can include that as they work with individual facilities and may have more authority than we.
I did also want to leave the committee with at least understanding that we enforce all the requirements that apply to these facilities, and there are numerous requirements that we are out there enforcing and have written a number of violations or NOVs on these facilities. It really relates to when there's a significant number of odor complaints and then us trying to write a ticket as a result of a nuisance violation. That's where we're prohibited from acting.
Right.
And so I just want to let you all know that we have staff, frankly, out at these facilities practically every day responding. And indeed, if they don't, for example, turn the compost properly and things like that to minimize the emissions, then that actually is subject to violation, as an example. So those are all efforts that we have underway. We can keep this committee informed maybe throughout the year as this situation continues to evolve. But I have to tell you, this is going on all over the Bay Area. Yeah. It just happens to be concentrated there because we have a variety of different types of facilities located there, and the people live up right up next to this facility.
Right.
It's a little bit of an unusual situation.
Right. Of Director Canepa, followed by Director Sperry.
Thank you very much. If we were to address the composting issue, and I was looking at your slide deck number 3, there's multiple other sources, right? So I guess where I'm going with this, so if we figure out the composting issue around odor, are there going to be other issues And then my second question to that is, I looked at your slide deck, there has been progress. Just looking at the graph you provided, can you kind of expand on the progress? And the third is the on-site inspection. Do we have someone in these facilities each day? I'd be curious. Thank you.
I'll address your last question first. So, yes, we have people in these facilities all the time. We do routine inspections. We walk the surface of the landfill with a hydrocarbon analyzer to see if there's leaks, surface leaks. In fact, we have issued 4 violations this past year for surface leaks. So anytime that's indication that their vapor recovery isn't working properly. We've done source tests on some of the abatement equipment. We've issued 2 violation notices on source testing. The ZWIT facility, they vented gas several times. We've issued violations on those. And they've also started in their attempt to try and get some improvement. They took their material, trying to compost it in a different way, and that resulted in a no permit to operate violation because they didn't permit it with us prior to trying it. It caused a lot of odors in the area, and that's going to require some modification. So, you know, we are working all the time with these facilities. We have people out there all the time. The permitting staff is working all the time. When you talked about this landfill expansion, that resulted in them requiring to come in for permits for modifications of their permits. So that's why the composting facility is more state-of-the-art than its current piles. So we are working on these facilities the whole time.
Sorry.
Okay. And the second part of your question, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I forgot the second part. I think
we'll answer that one. Yeah.
Director Sperry.
On this, the Milpitas, was there an EIR done?
Good question. That's
and how did we respond in EIR? What was our response?
Two off.
There was an EIR done on the landfill expansion.
Okay. How did we respond? What comments did we submit?
Yeah, it was been a long time, but, you know, I guess what I could speak to is that it's an expansion upwards, not an expansion outwards. Our current rule requires vapor recovery in the landfill itself, so there's always a negative pressure in this landfill, so an expansion up wouldn't necessarily cause us any issues in terms of the landfill itself. So we're just talking the landfill. We're not talking about the composting. We're not talking about the separation facility. This permit and this permit expansion from the city of San Jose was just for the landfill, accepting more material. So we commented on that, and I don't remember what the comment was.
Okay. Jack, I'm concerned when you say we ought to seek to change the legislation. All I'm hearing you say is let the cities continue or counties continue to make bad land use decisions, and we'll be the police force to clean it up. And I think that's very inappropriate. You know, I know in my county, we've got a city that built right up to the landfill. Should have never happened. And now you get complaints. And, you know, when you look all around this region and many of the facilities that we're talking about, there wasn't a house anywhere near them. And now all of a sudden, you know, the cities have built these subdivisions right up to these mm-hmm. facilities. And we're being asked to deal with the problem that they create. And, you know, when a lot of these facilities were built, they deliberately went way out of town. And, you know, at some point, if we're going to be the police force, then I think we ought to be commenting on land use. I really do. I think we ought to say it's not appropriate to have a house within X distance of a landfill or whatever the facility is. And I found it amusing. Last year, a gentleman sitting in my office complaining about the odors or something coming from one of the refineries right there on 680. And I said, well, when did you buy your house? Last year. When was it built? 3 years ago. I mean, what does he expect? And yet here we're out there just hammering the refineries or any of these various industries who did the responsible thing at the right time, but now they're being impacted. And, you know, I think there has to be some accountability when these local jurisdictions are making these bad land use decisions. And I agree with Supervisor Haggerty. I mean, this is just crazy. I mean, it's another community that's going to be totally impacted by this facility. And they don't even have a say. And so at some point, you know, if we're going to delve into this, I think we ought to start weighing in on the land use side of it. I really do. I think we ought to start commenting on these local projects. And that's the other question I have. Do we comment when these subdivisions or housing projects are being developed near these types of facilities? Are we commenting on those?
Oh, yes, Director Sperring, we do.
We do.
We our planning department comments, probably not on a smaller development, but I want to say anything that's of any consequence, any good size, particularly as we know that it's going to be up next to a facility like a landfill, composting. We see this playing out also with regard to the cement facility down in
Santa Clara County. Yeah, exactly. I looked at one of the old photos. There wasn't a house anywhere near that facility when it was built.
And if I just may, I mean, we did try to provide some more teeth to this issue in our CEQA guidelines.
Putting receptors near a source of
emissions. No. And
I think Gene's point ought to be highlighted because this board, a number of years ago, passed CEQA guidelines to look on these types of issues. It had to do less with odors, more with health risks, to say cities and counties should do an evaluation. Remember?
We were sued by
home builders, right? Yeah. And it's interesting. We weren't sued by industry. We were sued by home builders. And although Brian's ready maybe to say something, there was a sort of a settlement on that, which is going to, well, there was a loss. There was a decision of the court and then a subsequent settlement, which we're working on, which will allow us to continue to have those guidelines out there. So, yes, there is a history. It's just that folks haven't listened.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, been the issue, which is also why we need something more, which is, and even one, it's siting of the facilities or expansion of a facility, and then it's siting of what I guess are called receptors, right? Homes next to these facilities. But we can't ignore that they're there now, which is why I think the other sort of strategies, what do we do to force best practices to minimize the problem that exists today?
Yeah.
And all I was going to add is that we did have a new receptor odor threshold, which also was taken on in that litigation.
Right.
So that we had the same approach for odor as
right.
well as toxics.
Right.
But we also have planning guidelines. The Planning Healthy Places document addresses this in part. And there's more work going on constantly on that. And Dr. McKay reminded me that our comment on the landfill expansion was deeply unpopular with the San Jose folks and generated sort of a nasty response back to us. So we did weigh in. It clearly didn't make all the difference that it could have. But you're right about the siting issue being the primary one.
Right.
And this landfill, I think Jack and I remember it from our childhood in the South Bay,
right.
has been there a long, long time. And it's really the expansion of these composting operations and the new waste streams that are having to be accommodated that's the issue.
Right. Right.
If you just look at the odor complaint history, you can sort of see how that happened, right? For a long time, the landfill went along. It was sort of fine. Milpitas has always had an odor issue. But in 2015, 2016, it went through the roof in part because the expanding waste streams coming
right.
into these facilities are causing a lot more of
right.
that effort.
And we're all, you know, and those are great environmental goals. We don't want this stuff going to the landfill and all of those issues. And it's part of the state's greenhouse gas reduction goals, part of the goals on waste recycling. So it's a good goal. It's just figuring out where to do it and how to get forth the best practices and keeping houses away.
Okay. If I can, Mr. Chairman, there's an ongoing odor management plan that we are refining, I think, and
right.
implementing with.
Yeah. All these facilities, what we're required is an odor management plan. So trying to take care of, you know, how they, this changing waste stream, how they handle that change, how they react to it, how they react to the odor. That's part of this too. And so how quickly can they respond? You know, for instance, the landfill got some partially digested material from the food digestion facility. It was an off-spec material. They went and they buried it in the landfill, and they thought that was it, but it started producing gas really quickly because it was partially digested. That overwhelmed their system, caused a lot of odors, gas permeating through the landfill. So what they've done to adjust to that was to try and create a new cell for that kind of material that's already vapor recovery. So they get it on there quickly, prevent odors and prevent emissions from happening. So the industry is adjusting, And our mechanism for that is through our odor management plans.
Okay. The other thing, I think over time, you're going to see many of these types of facilities are going to have to relocate. So I think we ought to be looking at some policies or at least some criteria that if you relocate, here's this kind of the land use around it, especially when it comes to receptors. The other thing I'd like to recommend is that, you know, since we're going to be taking these calls, I really think that we need to say we're going to do what we can do and we'll enforce what we can, but here's a phone number you need to call, and it should be that jurisdiction. They should be receiving as many calls as we are because they have to put pressure on to clean this up too. I mean, they approved the facility. Mm-hmm. Let them help fix it. And so, you know, it really should be referred to that local jurisdiction since they're making that land use. But, you know, I would hope that our staff would be looking at some of the land use policies around many of these facilities and see what role that we can play. And I would like to see us even start commenting on small projects, the EIRs of small projects around all these facilities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just as a follow-up question. So, Brian, on the CEQA guidelines we passed, are the odor considerations still in that as well as the health risks?
Yes. So the ruling from the Supreme Court and then the Court of Appeal sort of enhanced that on the way back down to the trial court was that the new receptor approach, so if you're locating right. new housing near a landfill or a factory or something like that, can't be applied in general.
Right.
Right. And so that picked up both the odor and the toxics aspect of it. And so there's some limits to that. There are ways in which that can be applied, but it's significantly narrowed from what we had put out there before.
But we're allowed the guidelines. We still have those guidelines.
We do.
And we're still allowed to publish those guidelines.
We have.
And my understanding is the way CEQA guidelines work, if there are the best guidelines out there, a city or county really should be applying those guidelines.
Yeah, and that's right.
They're subject to risk and litigation if they don't apply those guidelines.
That is correct. But with the clarification from the Supreme Court, obviously yeah. people have to be a little more cautious about how they proceed with the receptor right. analysis. You know, most, right. not most, but many, many jurisdictions actually have in their land use ordinance,
right.
Partly the CEQA, but partly other aspects of it, that they do review impacts of existing uses on new uses.
Right. Yeah.
And so in some ways, it's already picked up in their exercise of their police powers.
Right.
That's something we want to encourage, obviously. That's what the Planning Healthy Places document does. And that work is, you know, sort of constantly moving
right.
forward. But that's the idea.
I think, I mean, Jim, this whole issue really comes, right, we've tried to address this through this whole CEQA approach. And, you know, and the courts have said you can't look at the effect of the environment on the project, in this case the environment being the odors from the landfill, because it's reverse CEQA issue. But the cities and counties can decide to do that in their policies. But they obviously don't follow through with that, as in many cases. So we were trying to get them to force them to analyze it, and so we achieved, I guess you can say, a half success.
More than half, but
three yeah. quarters. That they have to sort of consider it.
That's right. That's
okay.
right.
Scott, I think you get the last word.
I don't know if it's the last word, but Jim asked a couple of my questions in relationship to the EIR, and I think, Jack, in your response, I think you said it, but I just want to make sure. Did you, or maybe it was Brian, one of you said that we did come out against this, the expansion of this project?
We raised a lot of comments. I wouldn't say against it. We basically weighed in and said, this is the kinds of efforts and steps you need to take with regard to minimizing emissions. Generally, because we can't weigh in on land use decisions, we tend to typically say, if this decision you make with regard to how this land use is going to be undertaken, these are what you have to do. So we try to stop short of saying yes or no.
But maybe we should start saying no sometimes. And you know, I agree with Jim. I mean, I'm one of those people that agree that, you know, if the landfill was there 20 years ago and you bought your house 2 years ago, you should know what you bought. I totally agree with that theory, and I strongly support that. But a lot of people sometimes, and this is an argument against Jim, but I'm just making my own comment, A lot of people, sometimes they say, well, they look at the facts and they say, well, that landfill is going to close in 2020. Well, then they come and get a permit extension that goes out to 2040. That's the problem, that when they start expanding like that. And at some point, I think as the Air District, we need to say, no, enough's enough. Stop. This is not a good idea. You're now expanding into an urbanized area, and you should not be doing this. And I think we need to be stronger in how we respond, because I kind of, in caps, out of frustration, wrote, so why are we here today? I mean, I haven't really heard what we can do. I mean, one of the things here, continue to participate in quarterly South Bay Order Stakeholder Group. Who is that group?
That group was formed as a result of all this, the
issues. Who goes
issues.
To the meetings?
All the industry, all the facilities go there, all the regulatory agencies. It's a quarterly meeting so that they all can discuss in one room what's been going on and what possible solutions.
The industry?
The industry's there too, yes, each of the facilities.
Well, I think that's all that's there.
No. We participate, City of San Jose, Cal Recycle. So a number of agencies participate. And trying to get better communication.
Yeah, the City of Fremont, City of Milpitas.
I don't think they sat in a few times that I went, but I don't remember them always.
Well, I know you don't have District 1 Alameda County there because you've never invited us.
So. We can see what we can do about that.
I have a staff member that would just love to go to those meetings. And then on this amend Rule 7, mm-hmm. What are you actually thinking with that?
So, as I said earlier, that rule has not been amended since the 70s. And so what we're looking at is incorporating new odor sensing technologies, looking at new
things like that. All right. When will that come to us?
We're starting to work on the rule now. It's in the Clean Air Plan. So once the Clean Air Plan is passed.
Okay, so we'll hear about that in a minute. And then are they recovering the methane?
They are.
Are they recovering the methane out of them? What are they doing with the methane?
To some extent, we're talking the landfill. Now they flare it. They don't have the engines on.
Huh?
They don't have engines there to recover that at the moment. But
so some people shook their head yes when I said that.
Yeah, no.
And so you're telling me they are not recovering the methane.
No. But the other facilities, the ZWED facility and all those other facilities do recover that, and so does the sewage treatment plant. But the landfill itself at this moment, I don't believe, recovers.
No, it's just
they recover the methane. They just don't run it in engines. They use a flaring system.
They flare it
off.
Yeah,
right when you drive into the facility, you'll see these very large flares, Director Haggerty, for the landfill itself. But the other facilities we were talking about also emit methane, and they recover that. So it's a.
We don't really want them flaring it, do we?
Agreed.
So can we make a requirement that instead of them flaring it,
and that
they
is their
have
plan.
To use it like to run their trucks or something, use it as fuel for trucks, or
right?
Similar to what waste management's doing mm-hmm. out in the Altamont.
Yes. Yep, that's our understanding. That's what they're undertaking. They want to put engines actually in them.
Yeah, they do.
Great
a limited extent they do that, but not to the extent.
But they're not
they
doing it. So when can we make them do that?
I don't know if we can.
I mean, I'm just trying to look. You brought it forward, and I'm trying to figure out what my mission is here today,
and
I guess I'm trying to go out with a bang here. So what is it? I mean,
so largely we wanted to just inform you of this situation because there's a lot to this situation. It's a complex situation, as you know, and we just wanted to give you an update. And I clearly we're going to continue to do that probably towards the end of the year. Also, I just wanted to mention to you at the very beginning. You mentioned why aren't some of the more folks here? So let us make sure we. In our next workshop opportunity, be out there and give them this kind of presentation as well. There's several meetings we have planned for out there, so I think maybe as part of one of those, we'll
I don't want to
also
stop my last line
update.
Of questioning here, though, Jack. Can I just ask a question? When can the Air District go to these people and say, we don't want you to flare off the landfill anymore, and we want you to capture the methane and use it for a good use? We want you to either run your trucks with it, run your forklifts with it, run your equipment that's, you know, whatever. We want you to do something of benefit with it. When can we make them do that?
And just as a side note, the Air Resources Board is considering planning and regulations to move toward this sort of approach is the whole issue of methane. So that's their state regulation.
The opportunity to do that is now because of the expansion, and then they have to apply for permit modifications, so the time is now, so we'll take that back.
Okay, and does the permit come to the board, or is it?
comes to staff, right?
Before you issue the permit, I need to sit down and talk to you guys.
Absolutely.
So please don't sign the permit unless you come in and have a meeting with me, or at least bring it, maybe not bring it to the committee, but at least come talk to me as a district supervisor for Southern Alameda County.
Will do. Will do.
Thank you.
Great. I have no speaker cards on this item. All right. Moving on to item 5, which is draft 2017 Clean Air Plan, Spare the Air, Cool the Climate. And I know this presentation is focusing on how this plan addresses stationary sources.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Joya and members of the committee. Henry Hilken, our Director of Planning and Climate Protection, will start off this presentation with an overview of the Clean Air Plan, Spare the Air, Cool the Climate. And then Adanya Zamora from our Rural Development Group will go into a bit more detail about the stationary source control measures that we would pursue under rural development after Henry. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Joya, members of the committee. As Jean said, I'm going to give a very quick background. I want to leave most of the time to Adanya Zamora to dive a little more deeply into the stationary source measures we've outlined in the plan. So as we've reported to you previously, we're updating our clean air plan. There are two main objectives of this plan: to achieve deep greenhouse gas reductions, to make progress towards our long-range greenhouse gas reduction targets, and to continue to reduce air pollutant emissions to provide clean air in all of our communities all of the time. So this updates our current clean air plan, which is from 2010. You recall it's a multi-pollutant plan. This plan proposes 85 different control measures that will reduce ozone precursors, fine particulates, air toxics, and greenhouse gases. So in addition to this near-term control strategy, we also in the plan lay out a broader vision, sort of an aspirational vision of what the region would look like several decades in the future if we really are going to achieve those greenhouse gas and health targets, objectives. And what that vision looks like, we will have, in 2050, the region will have reduced our emissions to 80% below 1990 levels by 2020, consistent with, by 2050, I'm sorry, as outlined in your resolution and also as the state's, the governor's executive order. And we will have reduced emissions and exposure of air pollution in all of our communities. So in effect, all of our care communities will have gone. All our regions, all of our communities enjoy clean air. How will we get there? Reducing fossil fuel combustion nearly completely, making sure our buildings are powered by energy that's not dependent upon fossil fuels. And so, of course, that means much more renewables in our energy grid, our electricity grid. And in the transportation sector, that means electricity and clean fuels, driving our vehicles and using our vehicles much less. We would see our oil companies transitioning their production model to respond to these demands, to shift more towards renewable fuels. And as has just been discussed in the previous item, there needs to be a pretty substantial rethink in our waste management practices to reduce the amount of waste that we generate, to keep the organics out of our waste stream, but as the committee has just discussed, to make sure that those waste facilities really operate in a way that doesn't produce pollution or odors for the region or for nearby communities. So that's the vision. How do we start on that path? The control strategy lays out a series of measures that will begin us on that journey. And again, these you can see the priorities listed really are intended to make significant steps towards that vision. Reducing emissions from all of the sources that we regulate or and don't regulate, for that matter, mobile sources as well. Focus on CO2, but also in the near term, we're focusing on methane, which we believe is a very potent greenhouse gas in which we believe there are opportunities for near-term reductions while we work on the more difficult transition of our energy sector to reduce fossil fuel use. And again, as I've mentioned before, relying on technology and behavior to reduce mobile source emissions. And this plan, like all of our plans, relies on all of the tools that we have in our toolbox: regulation, incentives, our work with cities and counties that you've just discussed quite a bit, public education and community engagement. But I'm going to hand it over now to Adanya Zamora, a senior engineer in our rural development section, who's going to walk you through a little more the regulatory portion of our control strategy.
Thank you, Henry. Good morning, Chair Joya and members of the Stationary Source Committee.
I will continue the presentation with a brief overview of how this plan addresses stationary sources, as Henry mentioned. Mm-hmm. With over 40 rule-related measures, this sector uses rulemaking as a main tool to make progress on the plan's priorities. The main priorities for the stationary sources sector are to decrease greenhouse gas emissions, to reduce criteria pollutants from large sources, and to lower the public's exposure to toxic contaminants. Today, I will highlight two key efforts aimed at achieving each of these priorities. I will start with greenhouse gases, or GHGs. I will cover the other two priority areas later in the presentation. Actions in the plan focus on two strategies to decrease GHG emissions from stationary sources, improving industrial efficiency and stopping methane leaks. These strategies are complementary. Reducing emissions of methane, a powerful and short-lived climate pollutant, can provide significant and immediate climate benefits, while carbon dioxide reductions occur from the improvement in industrial efficiency to help us achieve long-term climate stability. The basin-wide combustion strategy is an approach to stabilize and increase combustion efficiency of the stationary sources in the Bay Area. The first phase of the strategy would establish carbon intensity caps on the sectors responsible for 3/4 of all industrial combustion emissions in the region. These are refineries, power plants, and cement manufacturing. Limiting carbon intensity, which is the CO2 emitted per unit of input or output, would prevent GHG emission increases from these sources at current levels of production. The second phase would involve source-specific regulations designed to reduce combustion emissions through increased efficiency.
Just a quick question. When you said refineries, cement plants, and power plants contribute to 3/4 of GHG...
From industrial combustion emissions.
Okay.
So other rules in the plan that are related to industrial efficiency are Draft Rule 1216, which would cap refinery GHG and criteria emissions, Draft Rule 13.1, the first rule under the combustion strategy designed to limit refinery carbon intensity, and Draft Rule 2.2, which would lower the GHG best available control technology threshold in our permitting process. The second focus area in the plan to decrease GHG emissions is to stop methane leaks. The basin-wide methane strategy is a set of coordinated actions to reduce the region's methane emissions in support of ARB's short-lived climate pollutant strategy. The strategy involves research to improve our methane emissions inventory, a general prohibition on significant leaks in the region, removing methane exemptions from relevant rules, new rules to reduce methane from the oil and gas and waste sector, and using other tools such as incentives and best practices to reduce methane from the agricultural sector. Next, I will describe two key areas of effort to reduce criteria pollutants from large sources. These are executing the refinery strategy, and systematically addressing particulate matter, or PM, in the Bay Area. The refinery emission reduction strategy was developed in response to a 2014 board resolution that established a goal to reduce refinery clean air pollutant emissions by 20% or as much as feasible by the year 2020. The refinery strategy is on track to meet that goal with 5 rules adopted so far, which are shown here in the table. We are estimating that these rules together will reduce total refinery criteria air pollutant emissions by around 17%. Additional rules that are being developed as part of the refinery strategy include reducing nitrogen oxide from gas turbines,
further refinery sulfur dioxide reductions from acid plants and other refinery units, and condensable PM and SO2 reductions from SCCU. That would be the phase two of Rule 6.5. In addition, the plan also addresses a major source of criteria pollutant, cement manufacturing. As part of these efforts, Rule 9.13 was amended to limit ammonia in October of 2016. Further amendments to Rule 9.13 to limit SO2 and other pollutants are also expected in 2018, as the rest of the rules in the table here. The other major effort detailed in the plan involves reducing PM levels in the region to achieve significant health benefits. New and amended Regulation 6 rules will reduce the general PM limit and address PM from track out, which is when vehicles drag dirt and other substances from a site, from asphalt operations, and from bulk material storage handling and transport, including coke and coal. The plan also calls for the evaluation of cost-effective strategies to address other sources of PM, such as commercial cooking and fugitive dust, such as that comes from a large construction site. Finally, I will discuss two major efforts in the plan to lower the public's exposure to toxic contaminants, incorporating the latest health risk assessment guidance on all of the Air District's toxics programs, and focusing on reducing the risk from existing sources through new draft rule 1118. The Air District has already made significant progress in incorporating the latest health risk evaluation science into the Toxics New Source Review, or NSR, program. Rule 12.5 implements the Air District's HRA and risk management procedures through the NSR program. The Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, or OEHA, released new guidance for these procedures in 2015. Rule 2.5, which was amended in December of 2016, will help the Air District follow this new statewide guidance. This amendment increases the stringency of the toxics program for new and modified sources. The Air District also is proposing to incorporate this new guidance in the evaluation of existing sources, which brings me to new draft rule 1118. This rule reduces the public's exposure to localized health risks from toxics emitted from existing sources. The main difference between these rules is that Rule 2.5 addresses new and modified sources, while Draft Rule 1118 addresses risk from facility-wide emissions. This draft rule involves hundreds of facilities, including refineries, HRAs conducted by Air District staff using the latest OEHA guidelines, one of the most aggressive risk thresholds in California, 10 in a million cancer risk, and the prioritization of refineries for health risk evaluation. This draft rule is expected to be ready for board action in 2017. And here to conclude, I'm showing two tables that show the rule development calendar for the rest of 2017 and 2018. These tables indicate the key efforts expected to be implemented during these years. Thank you for your attention. I will be happy to answer any questions.
Why don't we hear from the speakers, since we have three speaker cards, and then come back with our questions. This is informational, and we had asked for this presentation. So I have Jed Holtzman, Bob Brown, and Andre Soto. So why don't the three folks? And each speaker has 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Gioia and directors. Jed Holtzman from 350 Bay Area. We put in a lot of comments on this plan. Certainly can't go through them now, but want to thank staff/apologize to staff for going through our 33 pages of comments. Just want to highlight a couple things here. We talk about reducing combustion a few times in this presentation, but then the measure that's presented to you is about increasing efficiency of combustion. And that's certainly great, and we support that, but we just want to highlight that in order to reach the vision for 2050 that the plan lays out, we do need to reduce and nearly eliminate combustion, basically eliminate it wherever possible in favor of electrification. Also want to highlight that this vision that we lay out, when we use the word vision, that usually sounds like an aspirational thing that would be nice to have. But I want to just remind you that this vision for 2050 is not some kind of hopey changey thing, but basically something that is necessary, but not even sufficient for our civilization to continue to persist in its current format. So we not only need to meet this vision, we need to meet or exceed this vision, and there can be no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Obviously, if we're going to be changing industry so substantially over time, the longest glide path possible, I'm sure, would be preferred by industry. So we would urge that the Air District start now to investigate what it will actually take to eliminate combustion, as opposed to just starting to look at increasing efficiency of combustion, since reducing combustion in a responsible way to zero or near zero will take a lot of time. So we need to start now. This entire plan, which is very thick if you haven't read it, this whole book is only control measures, nothing else. Your own staff's data shows that this entire plan, both of these books, if fully implemented, are nowhere near close enough to get us to our goals, our targets. And I'm disappointed that the GHG and PM data is not in your presentation, but if you see the charts of where we are and where we need to get to, the gulf is yawning. So we need to do all of this in both of these books and so much more on PM and GHGs, and your own data presented in the plan bears that out. I want to highlight, if you could write this down, table 512, page 5/38 of this plan shows a rulemaking schedule for the next few years for all of the control measures. It's a lot of rulemaking, and we're going to need even more than that. It's all going to come to this committee. We're going to need much more active and robust rulemaking than in previous years. We cannot slow walk this calendar. In fact, if anything, we need to fast walk this calendar. And I would just highlight that in the last slide of your presentation already, you have a couple rules bleeding from 2017 in this book to 2018 in front of you, and that's really problematic for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bob Brown.
Good morning, Chairman Gioia and members. Bob Brown with the Western States Petroleum Association. We outlined our concerns and observations on this plan in a March 9th letter, which I'll leave a copy of here. But the district's plan states several goals that appear to contradict each other and conflict with some expert assumptions within its purpose and vision. And I quote, population exposure to unhealthy levels of ozone and particulate matter and cancer risk from exposure to toxic air contaminants have all been greatly reduced. And I think, as was stated earlier, the board can take a lot of credit for that, as well as the highly regulated refinery industry for those improvements. But it goes on to say, and I quote, to protect public health and stabilize the climate, we must take aggressive action to eliminate fossil fuel combustion and transition to a post-carbon economy. To achieve the 2050 vision, we need to reduce motor vehicle travel and to eliminate combustion of gasoline and diesel in our motor vehicles, with 90% of the motor vehicle fleet needing to be zero emission, close quote. Now, this is in contrast with the U.S. Energy Information Administration's reference case projections that overall petroleum liquids consumption will be higher in 2050 than 2015, despite gasoline consumption being projected to decrease by 20%. WSPA does not believe it's warranted or within the authority of the district to use its Clean Air Plan policies to seek elimination of fossil fuel usage, considering the improvements to air quality and the public demand for energy. And I remind you that There's billions in state and local tax revenue that the refineries contribute to the Bay Area, the thousands of jobs that are part of this industry, and these are the cleanest and safest refineries in the world. So I thank you for your attention.
Thank you. The last speaker card I have is Andre Soto.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That last presentation, I kind of think, reflects some of the alternative facts rhetoric we're hearing out of Washington, D.C., that is exacerbating the problems that this plan is trying to address. One of the things that I saw last week in the news was that if we stopped all sources of climate change today, by 2050, 90% of the Great Barrier Reef will be dead. That's if we stop today, and we're not stopping. This plan doesn't even stop us. But in looking at the presentation, one of the questions I have in terms of the rules that have already been adopted by this board, how many of those rules have resulted in lawsuits by the oil industry? What is the status of the litigation on those lawsuits? And what are the impacts on the rule implementation process? And then there is still no EIRs out yet on 1216 or 13.1. And on the slide number 12 called What's Next, it does not include any information on 1216 or 13.1. So I'd like to have some clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you. I think to note, all of the rules that we adopted under the 20% reduction are in litigation, correct? Each of them were challenged.
The ones in the last couple of years.
Yes, the one identified on that chart. And we're moving forward with implementing those rules.
Yes,
that's correct.
I'm going to start with a general comment. And I want to thank staff for having put together a document. And let me state this in no uncertain terms. It is the most aggressive plan in the United States of America. Let me be clear. I think we should acknowledge that, and we should acknowledge the work of communities who help us encourage that. But there's a long road ahead, and I think this plan is intended to be consistent with what the state of California is doing, not what the Federal Energy Administration is doing. I want to be clear. I know there's quotes of what the policies out of Washington. California's on a collision course with the federal government on this issue, and is going to continue. That's going to happen. So I think the idea of referring to federal policies isn't necessarily relevant for California, because California's statewide policy, right, the reduction goals for 2030 and the executive order for 2050 are clearly much more aggressive than the federal government's policy or lack of policy. So, but at the same time, we know that all of these things in here we can't do alone. This really relies on action by multiple levels of government: state government, city and county government, regional agencies like ourselves, the policies of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority Commission, Bay Conservation Development Commission. All of these agencies have a role in this. And I think the district has shown good faith up to now in moving forward with rules that it's adopted to help achieve reductions. But we're not just talking greenhouse gas reductions. We're talking about what are the benefits today to people who live in the Bay Area today from getting better air quality, reduced toxics, reduced criteria pollutants. I think California is 1% of the GHG emissions worldwide. So folks often ask, why is California and therefore our district being aggressive? And if you will hear Mary Nichols, chair of the Air Resources Board, who I think appropriately puts it, is that the policies of California are driving technology change around the world. That these reductions in getting better air quality and reduced GHGs are happening from the changing technology. China is putting on the road 100,000 electric buses a year. People say, oh, well, China's not doing anything. We can't do anything until China's doing something. China is actually putting more money to electric vehicle technology than we are. And I had a chance to visit the Tesla plant again. I've been there a couple times. Scott, I should have called you to get a passport to be in your district, so I apologize. Okay, I know you have. I've run into you there too. We'll take it in Alameda County. That's okay. We're a regional economy. Industry talks about the sort of loss of jobs. So Jack knows there's been a series of meetings of folks from around the state, and I participated in the last one, folks from industry, including Patty, your boss from Tesoro was there, folks from CBE, folks from environmental justice communities around the state, folks from industry, folks from government. And there was a really interesting discussion about how do we sort of achieve environmental justice goals as part of climate change and improved health. And there was a lot of discussion about jobs. And also PG&E and those folks were there, right? And about how the jobs over time that will decrease in the fossil fuel industry, no one's talking about refineries closing tomorrow. That's not happening. As folks indicate, there's a demand for gasoline. But over time, as decades occur, and as jobs decrease in the fossil fuel industry, jobs are increasing in the new energy economy. So when you only talk about one side of the coin, which is lost jobs over here in fossil fuel, you have to talk about the other side of the coin, which are the jobs, and folks acknowledge that in that room at Berkeley, in Berkeley last week, that there are increases, there will be and are and will continue to be increases in jobs in the new energy economy. So, and how do we transition to that? How do we train workers for that, knowing that this is happening over time? It's not happening right away. So, yes, there's a bit of vision in this, but there's also a bit of immediate action, because ultimately people judge us by what are the benefits today to our economy, to air quality, to public health, and all the things you lay out here will achieve immediate benefits as well. We lose sight of that sometimes when we talk about climate change. We don't talk about the immediate benefits. So I just wanted to make those points and acknowledge that and say that this is not going to be an easy road ahead, in large part because there has been opposition from Washington in moving this direction. And it is really, I think, it does a disservice to people's public health and to the globe to sort of remove climate science out of this federal budget. It's just really shameful. And hopefully we get through this. And the last piece of hope I'll offer is in listening at a conference recently to the environment minister for Ontario. He said this as in closing comments to a conference. He said to the folks, several hundred folks in Sacramento, he said, "This has happened to us in Canada. We got through it. Because the work continued in the provinces. It continued in Ontario. It continued in Quebec. So with the election of the new prime minister in Canada, they were able to take the work that the provinces had done, not unlike what we're doing in California, and continued the work. So I think that's the hope for us, is California will continue to do this work, and we'll get through it. And California has the authority to do it. Brad. Sorry for my long sort of little speech, but I think deserve.
We're getting used to it.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a pretty relevant issue, and I'll take this opportunity to talk about that anytime.
This is a very relevant issue, and I appreciate the report in a focus on the stationary source, because I have heard the general report a couple of times now, and it was good to get the more specific for stationary source. We're doing a lot. One of the things I wanted to ask about was the commercial cooking. You mentioned commercial cooking as just one of the bullet points that you went through. What are we looking at in that?
Sorry. We're looking at stricter controls on charbroilers, and we're looking at wood smoke as well from cooking. Probably the most likely scenario in terms of cost effectiveness is adjusting our existing charbroiler rule to allow for some perhaps less effective controls that are lower cost so that we can get a broader range of controls installed. Charbroilers are a particular issue.
Okay, and what about, and you mentioned the wood burning. I've seen more and more wood burning pizza.
Right.
And that seems to be out more and in more confined situations.
Exactly. I mean, coal sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we're looking at possible control measures for control technology for those sources. It's always an issue, though, when you look at the socioeconomic impacts of those, because these are typically very small businesses with very narrow profit margins. Yeah. And so we're continuing to research this along with the other major air districts in the state to try and identify cost-effective options to address that concern.
Okay. Thank you.
Can on the risk reduction plans going from 100 per million to 10, how are you measuring the results of that, the benefits? How's that being measured?
Dr. Spang, you're talking about proposed Rule 1118.
Yes.
That will so what we do is we're going to be requiring companies to file health risk assessments and reduce their relative risk. What we try to do is we look at the socioeconomic impacts of that, and we know that there are benefits by lowering overall toxic exposures in communities. And the stationary source contribution, while it's small in many of the cases, it's still part of the overall solution. So we try to tease out what we think are the benefits. Greg, I don't know if you want to add to my remarks, but it's not the most easiest thing to try to explicitly say this is how many dollars that will be saved because this many less cancers. It's hard and difficult, but I think we try to parse it out. Greg,
Jack, where I'm going with my question is I'm hoping that we look at the cost of that and what the benefit is. I mean, there might be a better place to put our effort. I just want to make sure that we have a way that we're measuring, that we're not requiring something that gives us really no benefit because the hardship that it may create.
Yeah, Director Spearing, and I, to kind of echo Jack's remarks, we're focusing on the HRA as a way to kind of quantify that. One of the things that this district is doing that other districts don't is allowing for more flexibility so that we can ensure that the sources that may not be able to make it down to 10 are installing the best retrofit control technology. Okay. That's available. And so we've been working extensively with the refineries, the clean water agencies. We're going to be talking to the hospitals about identifying what the sources that need to be controlled are and trying to make sure that we balance the cost, especially to some of the small organizations, the nonprofit, the government organizations, with the benefits. And we're also looking at maybe extending the timelines for some of the public agencies to allow them to spend, you know, to go through the process they need to go through to identify capital costs.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure that we're sensitive to that.
We are.
That's a big challenge. Thank you.
I don't want to steal the thunder of that rulemaking because you'll hear about it here soon, the next few months. But one thing we'll do is, as Greg mentioned, is provide more time for people to comply. And it's all a matter of really the work is defining what they need to do to implement and meet their overall number. And that's defining what we call toxics, best available retrofit control technology. That's really the heart of that rulemaking. And we're being very sensitive to make sure that we're proposing that which is ultimately required and also cost effective. So that's how we're really, I think, trying to meet your need.
And I know in the process of this, and I know folks come to our meetings and talk about the importance of us to consider the economy as we do, as we take these steps. And I think it's important to note that we do an analysis on each of our perspective rules, what it means. We do an economic analysis. And so I think that's understood. The goal here is not to displace workers. The goal is to, in fact, work with the industry. And I'm glad, I mean, Bob, your boss, Kathy Rehise Boyd, was at this state-level discussion with EJA communities last week. So the idea is working with industry to understand, right, how this transition occurs in ways that have the greatest immediate public health benefits and move us toward our climate change goals and look at how our economy transitions and understanding the impacts of and I think the history of this agency shows that it indeed does that. It considers economic issues to ensure that we're doing this in a way that is thoughtful, but at the same time being aggressive about it.
So if I may add to the conversation. So we are very fortunate to be in this region mm-hmm. with public members who are supportive of aggressive work towards climate goals and community health, meeting ambient air quality standards. We are blessed with industry that steps up to the plate because the public expects it. And we are blessed with a board that is willing to be leaders in this area. And
we thank the staff for like really working hard to piece this together because it took a lot of hard work with input from the community.
Absolutely. So this plan, which is the focus of this item today, will come to the board for your consideration, a public hearing at the third Wednesday in April. I think that might be the 19th, April 19th.
What specifically is coming to the board?
This plan. Yes. Today we talked primarily about the stationary sources, but the plan document itself that Jed held up, the two pieces.
Approving the vision plan.
The vision and the control measures. To set the path forward for the future and to help with a dialogue in this region about working together, collaborating with all the entities who care about this region's effort on the climate crisis. Right. So this will come to you for your consideration, public hearing, public speakers on April 19th.
Right. And really, we're going to, much of this is going to involve partnerships with other levels of government. I think we have to be realistic that we can't do this alone. What we do best is control air quality from the standpoint of toxics and criteria pollutants. That's what we've been able to do best. And as we continue to do more and be more aggressive, I think we recognize that those are the areas where we are still the strongest in protecting people's public health. Because a lot of these will be state actions too.
Sure. I just wanted to echo Gene's comments. I think the point about collaboration is vitally, vitally important. I want to thank staff. I think the presentation was very well done. But when we talk about where do we want to be in 2050, I think you touched upon some very, very important issues. And then there are a couple that I really want to point out. I think, and it's ambitious, it's bold. I like the power supply is nearly 100% renewable. I think that's extraordinarily important. I think the other thing, and I think about the communities that come before us, is about the disparities in the HRA, which is the health risk from air pollution, that has been eliminated. So I think staff has put in a lot of effort. But to echo what Gene said, I think we have to bring all our stakeholders together to sort of dialogue. But I think this is it's a great start, and I'm looking forward to more conversations. So thank you.
Any other comments, any other public comments or comments from staff? Okay. With that, that was our last item. We are adjourned.